This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're about to listen to an interview which our socios enjoyed in full 12 months ago. If you'd like to listen to these exclusive monthly big interviews on the day that they're released, it's time to join us. That means supporting us. It means the price of a pint per month. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Go now, join and become a socio. That means you'll get that extra big interview every month. And you'll also unlock our entire archive straight away, all for £2.99 a month. It's the best deal in town, baby. And we need you. Whenever you speak to Quentin Fortune, what you're guaranteed to get is his joy at a life spent in football oozing out of him, which is why we chose him to begin this new season of The Big Interview. We start with nightmarish surroundings in the Cape Town flats, but then move to London, where working around Terry Venables, Guy Lineker, but particularly Paul Gascoigne, was like having Christmas every day. This same man feared for his football life when making his debut for Atletico Madrid against Barcelona and the original, brilliant, Brazilian Ronaldo. A good raconteur and soon to be a coach playing attractive Pep Guardiola-style football. His licences are ticking off one by one. Quentin Fortune is a terrific and entertaining way to begin a new season of The Big Interview. Sit back and listen to my friend while the joy oozes out.
God, the new season's here. Season 4, The Big Interview. Manchester, we're with Bafana, Bafana legend, Atleti star, Manchester United star, friend, Quentin Fortune. Mr. Fortune.
Graham, good to see you, mate.
Good morning, man.
Good to see you, amigo, too. Good to see you, maestro.
Hablas muy bien en español.
Muchísimas gracias.
The last time we saw each other, we were sharing a television studio, and to make a point about something you were watching, you were talking about experiences at Manchester United and the Champions League. So, I want to take you back to a specific date. The date is Wednesday, 25th February 2004. The background is that Manchester United are in Europe. I'll let you name the club.
Yeah, Porto.
Porto, correct. And something extraordinarily special is about to happen, given that the man who currently manages Manchester United was the opposition coach that night. But if we put a micro rather than a macro in the game and we hone in on a little battle that a previous guest of ours was talking us through, Benny McCarthy was saying that he obviously wanted to star that night. He was a bit of a Manchester United fan growing up. But he told us that from minute 14, he was running around the pitch with a phrase going around in his head, I can't let him knock me out, I can't let him knock me out, he scored, I've got to score. Put the flesh on the bones of what I'm talking about, because you know what I'm talking about.
Well, that game, wow, that's a heartbreaking game. Well, it's a special game because I was even saying the pitch with Benny, and when we walked out and game starts, and I'm just remembering the first time me and Benny were playing against each other, we were 10, I think under 10s or under 12s, and we're in the Cape Flats. So that image of me looking at Benny, we're looking at each other on the pitch, was like, we're looking at each other now, we're in the Champions League. This is unreal. Two kids from Cape Flats playing for Porto, Manchester United. This is beyond your craziest dreams. And I don't know how I scored. I think it was a free kick. It was a rebound. And then I just tapped it in with my left foot. Great start for us. And then Benny just took over. But I told him before the game that that's how good Benny is. And it was great to see Benny score. But at the same time, of course, I want to win. Yeah, fantastic night for Benny. But for both of us, because we scored. But unfortunately, we didn't win.
So to make the night when Porto at home beat Manchester United make sense to people when you called it unbelievable and something of a dream, I suppose you have to describe seeing Benny for the first time and you have to tell people what the Cape Flats mean.
Oh my goodness, when the Cape Flats is, you got gangs first of all. When you think of Cape Flats, you think of crime, you think of violence, drugs. It's a nightmare for any kid to grow up in certain areas. It's a nightmare. So for us to come out of that, it's...
Well, not just to get to play in the Champions League against each other for Porto and Manchester United, but I know both of you, and here you are, you know, successful, clean-cut, a dad, friendly, teetotal, a happy man. You know, if you hadn't told that story and I presented you to somebody, they wouldn't believe that you grew up in something you've described as a nightmare area. Yeah. That
I was, in terms of the sports side, for me it was like I thought about this before I come to speak to you. In terms of the sports side, that for me was like heaven, because I love football. Our flat was here and the stadium was right there. There's a football field, football field, football field. So for me, it was like Christmas.
Why were there all those facilities? On the desk here, you said that there's a stadium and then pitches, football fields surrounding it.
Yeah.
Who built them? Were they mud? Were they real? Were they grass?
They were grass. First of all, I couldn't believe it. We had to make, because obviously the weather was amazing. They were grass. The council built them. And I remember as a kid, there was not a day that I wasn't on the football field. I'd go to school. On my way to school, I was already preparing what I'm going to do, first break, second break, on the pitch. The school I went to was a predominantly African school, so they only played rugby.
Rugby, yeah.
Which was like...
Some cricket too?
No, just rugby. It was so that's why my language is Afrikaans. And then I told my mum, look, I played my first rugby game, didn't enjoy it. I said, my mum, I can't do this. And bless my mum, she just took me out of the school.
What basis? Why did she listen to you?
Because she knows how crazy I was about football. They knew I was absolutely mad about football. Every time they looked for me, there was either on the football field or somewhere around the area where I was playing football. And, well, she saw already from... I think my parents already saw it from a young age, because I started to leave home at 9. I was playing for my provincial team and we travelled. And then, I started travelling really early and they knew I was in love with the game.
They must have seen some talent. They must have believed that you had some talent as well. But when they changed schools on the basis of your love of football, in theory, if, you know, in quotes, were they changing you to a lesser school? The school you were in?
No, it was the school. Actually, they changed me to Graham. Was, yes, like I said, the stadium was here. It was just opposite the stadium, so it worked out perfectly for me. The only reason I wanted to go to that school, it's because they played football.
It's soccer, yeah.
And it's nearer. So it worked out perfect. And we had the football pitch there was sand. It was the best.
Every footballer who gets taken away from their parents has a real struggle about how quickly to mature, who do you follow, who do you listen to. In your instance, you know, although it was truncated, it was shorter than it should have been. What did that formative experience in London at Spurs do to you? Secondly, if I can jump back a little bit, everybody listening to us now, hello socios, like stories. They're passionate about football, but they're passionate about people. The great privilege that you can do, that all our guests can do, is take them there. So when you arrive at Spurs, try and describe the atmosphere, the leaders, the people who impressed you, anybody who took time with you, and try and bring the listener into that moment.
It's crazy, Graham, because one moment I was running around in the Cape Flats playing for my local team and provincial team. The next moment I'm sitting on a plane trying to open the window. No, really, trying to open a window thinking nothing works. And then arriving in London, the first...
This is your first time out of the country, right?
First time
in a plane?
First time in a plane. And then first time out the country and arrive in London, just remember the strong accent of the taxi driver on from Heathrow Airport to where do we go? We stayed in Belsize Park. That's the first area I remember stayed in. And then going to Mill Hill Training Ground and meeting Terry Venables. Amazing man.
He is.
Unbelievable. He was so good to me. It's unbelievable. And then seeing Gazza and Gary Lineker and Paul Shute and all these guys, it was wow.
Venables was what, just friendly, or you couldn't believe the manager turned out to welcome a 14-year-old kid, or what?
Both. I arrived at 14. I'm training with my age group, and then he calls me over to come and train with the first team. No, this is just like, come on, what's going on here? The way he treated me, spoke to me, and just gave me that confidence, because I'm in a complete different planet from where I come from. English is not my first language, so I'm trying to listen to every single word and understand it.
Are you struggling a little bit?
Yeah, because
a little.
It's Afrikaans, and we the way we speak Afrikaans in the Cape Flats is shocking. So the only English I knew was from obviously going to school a little bit, but couldn't speak it properly, and watching TV.
So expressing yourself is a little bit hard.
Yeah, well, the only way I could express myself was on the football pitch, and then it was amazing every day, because every day I go to training, you see Gazza doing something else. He's cutting up someone's training kit, he's driving the milk buggy around, splashing through the puddle or something. Someone's car will be parked in a different place, in a canteen. It was like Christmas being around him. It was absolutely brilliant. And I remember one game at the White Hart Lane. It was in the reception area. He came out to the reception, so because we normally used to clean the change rooms. And he saw this kid with the ball, and he stood near the reception area with his glass behind him. And he said, the kid excited, this Gazza on my head. The kid, like, oh, excited, froze it. And he walks away, smashed the window behind him. He just really, wow. But brilliant. Because you could see the kid's face just light up, like, boy, that's going. He's got a ball in his hand, he wants me to throw it to him. Wow. He just walks off. Steve Archibald, bless him. I went to training once, and I was my own there. It wasn't many players training, and he came, and he took me. We did the warm up together, and he just took his time out. And this is the great Steve Archibald for me.
Yeah, you don't need to convince me. Another guest in this series, Aberdeen League winner, and your fellow La Liga analysis expert in Barcelona when we worked together.
That for me meant so much, because someone just took the time to speak to me. We did a warm up together. I was watching him. I was like, wow.
Did people understand the language thing? Did they just think you were shy?
I don't know if they thought, but I think the football just took care of everything. Because when I arrived there, Graham, the guy who took me over, Colin Gee. We had like a bad experience at the end, but he trained me so hard before I arrived in England, so I was probably in better shape than most kids my age group. So I trained 3 times a day for three, 4 months before I arrived in England. So it's because I had to make sure, or he made sure that I was physically prepared better than any other kid that I was going to face at the level, because you just can't come in and be normal. You have to be out of this world and have to try and be as better this kid on it, skill wise, mental wise, and we had to cover all the bases. So when I arrived here, I was like strong, you know, well prepared.
When they called you to train with the first team, you could hold your own.
I was so excited. So I was just playing and just getting on with it, and the players enjoyed it. But this for me wasn't no different, because that's what I grew up in the Cape Flats. My brothers were playing, and I was the kid sitting on the side, and they would say, "Come on, join in," because I would be there every day, like. Go and get the balls,
no
and
chance.
Okay, just let him join in. And at the end, I just joined in. For me, that gave me a lot of experience. So obviously, I was excited, because this is another level, being involved with Terry Venables and Gazza and all the first team players at Tottenham. But that's what I was doing as a kid anyway. So I was been throwing in at the deep end with the senior players.
So tell me what you try to do in training, because you don't have their experience.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, like, however strong or quick you are, mm-hmm. street wisdom separates a senior player and a junior pro. So if you said to yourself, whichever day you happen to be called into the big training, the senior training, and you're a little bit younger and you don't have professional football under your belt,
mm-hmm.
what did you try to achieve, or what did you try to avoid doing? What was your mentality?
my mentality just to play. I wasn't, there was no fear or anything, or it was just like, wow, go and play. So I would just do all the stuff I knew. I couldn't think. I wasn't thinking it. I was just like, the ball come to me, do something. What I would do when I was playing with the kids over there, or my age group, or what I was doing in Cape Town. Take a man on, back heel, bit of skill. And that's how they got to just encourage me. And I really enjoyed my time at Tottenham, because they saw what I had and they just like, they encouraged that. And Tottenham always wanted to play football.
Mm-hmm.
And they just encouraged me.
Did any of the senior pros resent it if you tried a trick? Or
not that I knew about. But Terry Venables was always the one, like, you know, just handed around my shoulder, well done. And
you're describing an environment, mm-hmm. which I don't think is all that normal.
Yeah. Well, now, I think
a quiet foreign kid comes, gets promoted ahead of his time, age 16, in the first mm-hmm. team training, just turns up and does his stuff, including a little trick yeah. if he wants to. And one of the senior pros doesn't give him a clatter just yeah. to say, listen, son, calm down. Which, you know, could have happened at United if you yeah. stepped out of line in the environment yeah. Yeah. you're going to go on and understand. You're describing a very kind of an unusually easygoing
yeah.
atmosphere.
I didn't, honestly, I probably had it from me from my age group or the kids just a year above me, but from the senior players that I can remember, I didn't have any problem. I remember, yeah, Sol Campbell obviously made it the first team, and I was playing with them as well on a Saturday afternoon, and that was a crazy experience. Ray Clemens was the manager, and he asked me to also be involved with the reserves, and I mean, as a 14-year-old, this is like, what's going on? This is crazy, but I was enjoying every single moment of coming to the training ground, and the great Bill Nichols sitting in his car coming to speak to me. And I remember this word so clearly, because I remember there's a moment at the end of the game and it was at the edge of the box, and I was should have just put my foot through it, and I tried to chip the goalkeeper, trying to be cute and trying to be clever, and I just remember his words, you have to be more ruthless. And this is the great
Bill Nichols, I mean, double winner,
come on, he's giving me this advice. I'm a kid here, like, wow. So the first week I trained with the first team,
mm-hmm.
That session he let me train with the first team. A week later, talk about putting pressure on a 14-year-old kid, I'm the front page of Sun newspaper, the first million-pound kid. So now every game I play for Tottenham,
mm-hmm.
everyone is there.
Yeah. Show us your genius.
Show us who this boy genius is, the future, whatever. Being compared to this and that. And I just like, all I was doing, I just wanted to play football.
Did you like that at the time when you...
No, I didn't.
Earn that publicity?
No. My agent, the guy who brought me over, him, he was like, this is fun. This is brilliant. But for me, I was just like, I just want to play. Because now you go back to the changing room,
mm-hmm.
like you mentioned, the players. You think you big time Charlie. You got an agent. Because that time, I can afford a 14-year-old to have an agent.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Look back now, you know, after your career, what did Spurs teach you that lasted with you throughout your career?
I remember the words from Terry Venables. These are the stuff I take away. Practice made permanent. Yeah. I'll always remember him saying that, practice made permanent. The coaches I had was fantastic. Pat Holland, Keith Waldron. I need to remember my under 14 coach, Peter something. These were all people that were just Ray Clemens encouraging me to express.
Not Peter Shreves, no. No,
I no Peter Shreves was there. He was more up with the senior team, but yeah. But they were all brilliant. Ted Buxton, amazing. Paul Gascoigne, it was just encouraging me, because when they saw what I was doing in games and training, they would just continue to keep doing what you're doing. the dream was when I got the taste of playing for Tottenham, I want to be here, I want to be part of the first team, I want to you clean the changing room, you want to go through that and grow up with your teammates and make that next step, which is in the first team, staying in digs. Tottenham just encouraged that. So many good players at Tottenham at that time. You can go through the Sol Campbell, obviously it was well known. There was Stephen Carr, later obviously calling Freddie, Danny Hill, Jeffrey Minton, fantastic players. Darren Caskey, you can go through the whole team. There was so much talent in it. Tottenham always wanted to play, which shooted me right down to the ground. So yeah,
and it doesn't work out. You know, it's a disappointment. Yeah. It doesn't work out. Not anything to do with you or your talent or your progression. Just, you know, between Spurs and signing professional and Colin, etc. But it turns out nicely, because eventually, even though you have to return to South Africa, which must have felt
not yet. So
devastating.
I haven't returned straight away to South Africa. So now I go to Chelsea. So I'm at Chelsea for 8-9 months, and Glenn Hoddle's the manager. Oh my goodness, Graham Ricks was the youth team coach then. Amazing experience. So I trained with the first team a couple of times with Frank Sinclair, Dennis Wise,
Eddie Nedzicki.
I mean, it's just Glenn Hoddle was. I know Glenn was amazing.
Yeah.
As a manager, as a coach, but at the same time, just to watch him demonstrate the exercises was just embarrassing. The balance, the both feet, I mean, it's just outstanding.
He could still do things that his players couldn't do.
I remember playing a game with him, it was a friendly game, and he was playing in the same team. It was just like, wow, like pinging balls with both feet. It was just like, come on, what is going on here? But it's a great inspiration, because that's what you want to be like. You want to be able to have the balance of being able to change the game with both feet when have no problem. So I spent eight, nine months at Chelsea, and they were trying to also get me a work permit. That didn't work out. So then I went home to South Africa.
It's simply the fact that because you didn't have international caps, because you were so young, the work permit couldn't be resolved.
I think the work permit could have been sorted out at Tottenham, but I can't really go into details with the agent. But because Tottenham had everything prepared, they put me into school, they put me into digs, the plan was to sign for Tottenham professional contract, and their professional contract was there on the table. And unfortunately, the agent at that time, he wanted something else, which was confusing to me, because I was ready to sign.
You had everything that you wanted in front of you.
Oh, crap. Yeah. I was ready. I learned my trade at Tottenham, grew up with the kids there, stayed in digs, went to school. So I was ready now to make that next step and become a professional football player and tried to fight to get into the first team.
Mm.
And unfortunately, he had other ideas, and then he was my guardian, and he's the one, basically, I trust him. He was like a father figure.
It doesn't make it better for you, but football is full of these tales and these people and experiences. Unfortunately,
he wanted
full of it.
He wanted something else, which I was still confused. I don't know if he wanted more money or something, but I just wanted to play. But that fight already started the day I left Cape Town. So yeah, I should have probably listened to my parents then. But yeah, because I just had this in my mind. He was the guy who gave me the opportunity, so I was like, I need to repay him back.
Mm.
And I believed in him and every word he said. And when he said we're leaving, I was like, wow, I was disappointed, but okay, he knows best.
And once the work permit can't be sorted at Chelsea, you do have to go home. Now, albeit that you're going to go on and have a successful career and you're an age where you still had it all in front of you, it must have felt pretty soul-destroying. It must have felt like a step backwards.
Yeah, because it was I was disappointed, because in my mind when I left Cape Town, not saying to myself, but just in the back of consciously thinking, I never want to go back. When this opportunity came, Graham, just so badly just wanted to get out of that area so desperately.
So it wasn't just a competitive instinct of a good athlete that nobody ever wants to take a backward step.
Yeah.
So when I asked that question, I was thinking career-wise.
Yeah.
But there was much more weight in having to go home for you because of where you were going home to and what you were going home to.
Didn't want to go back there, even though I'm grateful and I'm proud of where I come from, but just the environment, the football environment, the football side of things was unbelievable. I could not ask for better football education where I come from, because a school I went to, the football fields, the senior guys that played football that I looked up to, on a Saturday afternoon when I used to go finish my football in the morning as a kid, come home, eat, and then go to the football field right next to my door and go watch other senior players. on a Sunday, go to church, come back from church, and go watch football again. Mm-hmm. So that side of things, it was amazing.
Do you know, you've taken me to somewhere that we didn't prepare to go to, but the first time I began to understand or become interested in South African football, I met Benny's agent, mm-hmm. Rob, with whom he's mm-hmm. had a different relationship than Colin, and he used to say to me, one of the problems in the centre of South African football, he said, potentially maybe black South African kids who've come up with a certain level of football education, is that they think it's all about the show.
Yeah.
That a trick or making the crowd roar or applaud you is almost as important as a goal or a win.
Oh, it's more. Some places more.
It's more.
Yeah.
Which, if you think about it, is like Brazil gone wrong, mm-hmm. because everybody wants to win.
Yeah.
And he would explain to me that if you get that as a mass feeling and people get taught that way, that the show is greater than the result, what you get is basically nothing. And a nation going, but look at all this technique and these fantastic players, and why aren't we winning the Cup of Nations every couple of years? Or why don't we get to quarterfinals or semifinals of World Cups? It seemed to me that there was a mismatch in perception and reality.
Yep.
Yeah, you've never mentioned that once. You had a brilliant upbringing. You were a player who wanted to go on to succeed, to mm-hmm. win. Were you aware of those trends that I talked about, and why didn't they affect you? The show being above the result.
Yeah, I think where I grew up in the Cape Flats, probably if you go more to Johannesburg, and in certain areas in Cape Town, that's probably people will think of as a good thing. But where I grew up, it was about winning. Oh my goodness, every little game I played, Saturday or Sunday league, it was about winning at school. Yes, there was a trick now and then, a bit of skill, but it's about when you go into your first break or second break, or you're finishing school after school, you put your bags there and you will beat each other.
Funny, as you were describing that, your face changed.
Oh my goodness.
Instead of the permanent smile, it went all serious. And
yeah. And I remember my brother used to come pick me up, and bless him, my eldest brother Peter, he used to come pick me up on a Friday night and take me to the stadium, and I used to watch one of my local heroes, Duncan Crowe. He plays for a team called Light Bodies, and there was that competition. So I was watching that on a Friday night. There's a kid standing there. I was like, what's he going to do tonight? And he played as a striker, but the way he carried himself, but a great finisher, good footballer. I used to watch, obviously on TV at that time, Joe Musono, and these guys would do the tricks, but I wanted to win games. And as a kid, I lost a lot of games. Oh my goodness, I used to come home and be so angry, and I wanted to win. And every game we played, every single game we played, every day on the field, was about winning.
You take a step away from Q-Town and Cape Town Flats because you go to Spain. Let's leave Mallorca aside. Mm-hmm. I probably first got to know about you when you come into that Radiantic era, yep. I think, yep. at least.
Yep.
And, you know, you famously...
I can't say before Radiantic, because I had so many managers before you, so I don't remember which one you want to talk about.
We're going to talk about the reason for that.
Yeah.
Because you had the first-hand experience of Jesus Hill.
Yeah.
One of the most... I mean, in a pretty mental environment, Spanish football, he's right up there on the pantheon. He's the elite of absolute mental cases.
Yeah.
Tell us some stories about that era, because you were in the same training environment as Cholo Simeone, who's vital to the club now. Yep. You came into the club, or you were at the club during an era when, you know, they were double winners.
Caminero, Vizcaíno.
Caminero was just joined Malaga as a football director, but Caminero has been responsible for a lot of the signing. Mm-hmm. Kiko, I suppose, was at or around the club, centre forward. Pantic would have been playing,
Pantic,
I guess.
Yep. Tomic Paunovic was the manager now of Chicago Fire. It was just an amazing time. But, you know, with bless his soul, with Jesus Gil, Mr. Jesus Gil, he was amazing to the players. Everyone, I know what you people saw from outside, but when he came to his players,
now, Quentin, I don't make a habit of arguing with my guests,
but I hear what you say. But for us,
okay, what about the bulls in the back garden?
Oh, that was fantastic. He took us to his home. I remember he invited all the players and his son, Miguel Angel Gil. Where's the picture?
He's still in charge of the club.
Amazing man. Amazing human being. I owe so much to that man. He was amazing.
But back to the back garden.
Even sorting the deal out with United, he was 100%. Invited to his house, and then I just hear, Fortuna! Vamos! And I'm like, what? why are you calling me? Look at all the players. They wanted me to do bullfight. So there's a picture somewhere at home. I need to find it. Of me and Miguel Angel doing the bullfighting.
So what?
Not the proper bull. Let's put that there. It was a baby one. But I didn't know. Obviously, I didn't know.
So you have a cape?
I have a cape. One side of the cape and Miguel Angel Gil is holding the other side. And we're doing the whole lay. And they doing the whole lay. I just want to get back to the wherever I was sitting. But
it might have been not a full size bull, or it might only be a young bull, but could it have knocked you over?
I wanted to be out of Graham. I wanted to, oh my goodness, please get me away from this. But we did one or two, and then I said thank you very much.
Thanks, President.
Yeah,
I'm out of here.
Really enjoyed it, but amazing. I mean, the president was,
he was a guy who was jailed. He's now not alive. Mm-hmm. Effectively, you can tell it as it is.
He was amazing. He used to come in with a bag and say, this is yours. Go and win this game.
And it contained cash.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
But that, if you want to give your own players cash to win a game, that's,
it was brilliant. It was amazing. Like, for me as a kid, I was like, what is this? I'm travelling home with pesetas thinking, oh, what am I going to Cape Town with pesetas and all this money? It's unbelievable. But he was great with the players.
Describe him, because a lot of people who aren't my age, or you're a lot younger than me, so Neil, but he was, describe him, because he's a big,
larger than life figure.
Larger than life, sure.
Like, nothing fazed him, like when like the guy was not scared of anyone.
Open
anything.
Shirt, medallion down here, slick back.
Yeah, walking
hair.
And be giving instructions like he was in control of everything. And when he came to his players, no one can say anything about this team. Aleti Ware was his baby. When he came to his players, making sure everyone's, you okay? Yeah, you okay? Yeah, brilliant.
So irrespective of what kind of scoundrel you are, if you treat your players well,
the players would fight. That's why you see Simeone fighting. Is that spirit? Is that fight till the end for him? He was amazing to the players.
Did Simeone stand out even then in training, or whenever you shared time with him? Because you were still developing at that stage. You were still a young player.
Simeone stood out.
Atleti and Atleti B. Simeone would have been a figure that I'd have thought was imposing at that time.
Simeone stood out. At that time, he was obviously as a player, so the player head on, very ruthless. He didn't give you anything in training. You know you get bite by him. But typical the way Simeone is now as a manager, don't give anything. And you have to fight for it. But you could see a very clever player. After Caminero was there, Kiko was outstanding. Kiko was fantasy. Everything was art to Kiko. Everything he did, the no look pass and Pantic. Oh my goodness, Pantic!
Gorgeous from the Balkans, from the former Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
Just seemed to pad about the pitch.
Yeah.
Like a sort of some sort of jungle animal. His
simple.
Sort of not never studs never going into the ground.
Yeah.
Just doing this and that and giving
free
it,
kick
the
specialist.
Ball. Yeah.
Free kick specialist. The moment that stood for me out at Atletico Madrid was obviously making my debut when against Barcelona, and they had for me probably the closest player or the thing we're going to get to Pelé was Ronaldo from Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this out in the open because I love Cristiano Ronaldo, I love Messi, Neymar, Ronaldinho. But this guy was.
Describe the Ronaldo of
the Ronaldo
days.
You, like I just mentioned, all those players. You take Ronaldinho, you take Messi, you take Cristiano Ronaldo, you take Neymar. You put all those together, and maybe you get Ronaldo. And I stand the generation now, which like probably see I'm crazy, but the guy was just crazy. It was unfair to the rest. He could run with the ball. He knew when. Sometimes you get players that are very quick,
mm-hmm.
but they don't have the intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
He knew how to play in between the lines. He could get it to feet. He could do the step over if he needed, if he wanted to, but there was an end product. He was ruthless. Oh my goodness. I remember, like I said to you, when I did the TED talk, I'm sitting on the bench and I was like, okay, I want to see what this Ronaldo is. And I just remember our fans killing him because he was going out with a blonde Brazilian girl then.
Yes, Susana Werner.
Susana. And I started to sing about Susana and I'm thinking,
ooh, don't get him back.
Okay. So the first half finished and we're down 3-0. Ronaldo scored the hat trick. He's angry. So the second half starts, and they had, look at this team. They had Figo, Pep Guardiola, Evandro Peña. Oh my goodness.
What a player.
I remember,
Giovanni, the Brazilian, might have been there.
Or Rivaldo. But obviously, I just remember Ronaldo stood out for me, and Figo. And Antic calls me, and he says, Fortuna, come, venir. And I'm like...
Your Fortuna in Spanish, Fortuna. Okay.
So I'm of course, this is my senior debut. I didn't get to do that at Tottenham, so now I'm going to make my professional debut. This is against all the teams in the world, is Barcelona. Yeah. Stood in the halfway line, excited to get on, and he goes to me, you're mocking Ronaldo. Talk about starting someone's career and finishing it at the same time. He should have just called me off then and said, like, you know, you might as well go and get changed because I think Ronaldo just finished your career.
Gee, thanks, coach.
Thanks, manager. But, oh, my goodness. He played against Atletico Madrid that season. I think 3 times he scored 9 goals. And I remember that season, that's the season our right back, it was called Jelly.
Correct.
And he did the bit of skill where he takes it that way and he brings it back. And I remember the next day in the Marca, they had like clip for clip to see just Jelly's facial expression, like where's he going? And but he was, oh my goodness. It's hard to see him the way he is now, because when he was playing, he was just...
He's always claimed that he was kept at an unnatural weight, particularly at PSV, where he's even skinnier than he was at Barcelona. And it's best at Inter Milan. And one of the things that it looked from a distance to me that he had was he was very powerful too. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't just a sprint away from you. He would turn you. If you leaned into him, he'd push back.
Everything, Graham, that you can imagine as for a footballer to have, the guy had.
He also had amazing finishing power, right?
When he got the opportunity...
The angles were really good. I seem to remember. He always kind of knew where a keeper might be unbalanced.
Yep.
And a lot of the finishes were slid.
Yeah.
I mean, he had power if he wanted, sure.
Yeah.
And the step over, if you're 1-on-1,
oh, it's
8 times out of 10, your keeper's going to lose that one. But he did snooker finishes, from my understanding, which mean that you've got peripheral vision, but also your timing about wait till the keeper can't make a move there. And it looks as if the keeper's done nothing.
Yeah.
I think keepers must have hated him, not just because of being scored against all the time, but he made them look like statues.
Yeah.
When it was all about, like, if I go now, he's on his left foot and I'll put it there and he can't move.
But, you know, when you spoke about the skill level in terms of kids want, in South Africa, kids want to do entertain, he could do that bit of skill, but the thing that made him so special and the best was he does a skill, beat you, and he scores.
Yeah.
That's what we need to guard.
It's the whole. Yeah, that's...
He would leave you to death.
Hopefully you enjoyed that big interview, which was first released as an exclusive to our socios 12 months ago. If you'd like to get these interviews on the first day that they're available, it's time for you to join us, to become a socio, and for only £2.99 a month, you will get an exclusive big interview, plus regular mini-documentaries, not only all ad-free, but all featuring me and bringing you interesting, funny, and sometimes scandalous things from Spanish football. Go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter to unlock our entire archive. That means that once you join, you will have a treasure trove of interviews with funny, elite, interesting, revelatory, top-class footballers. By joining us, you will help support this independent podcast. You will help to keep us on the road interviewing people and sending that content for your delectation. If you go to the gym, you'll be slimmer. If you've got a dog, he or she will thank you. If you've got a TV, you can turn it off and listen to this instead.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.